Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
How you doing? Chris Jordan here, coming at you from the recently eclipsed Path of the Serpent itself, Austin, Texas. We had some overcast weather here in town, things like that, but managed to get enough of a peep out of the sky for me to be able to grab this footage right here that you are watching. This is the actual eclipse for those of you who didn't get to see it. Mad props to my boy and guest tonight in our first segment, Mike Turber. For any of you that follow my astrophotography online, all that kind of good stuff, it's Mike Turber that took me down that rabbit hole probably about a year and a half ago after I moved to this location. We had a lunar eclipse here and I used my 6K camera and captured it and I loved it and kind of fell in love. And Mike was like, wow, what'd you use to shoot that? And I told him and he was like, dude, you know, you point that thing up at Orion's belt and take a little 3-second snapshot. Give me a call back. Let me see what you see. And that began my astro journey that has become a wormhole of love and fun in the evening. So I want to thank you, Mike Turber, for all of that. This is some absolutely awesome footage. It was fantastic to get out there with the family, meet the neighbors, all that kind of good stuff. And to know that I did not get to get footage of the Devil Comet, sadly enough. I did see the Devil Comet going through the sky, saw a few of the planets, things like that through the clouds. The Devil Comet was very prominent. But, you know, our topics tonight, Mike Turber is on in the first segment. We will be talking about not only Russian, but U.S. laser technology. A few years ago, there was an announcement from a former Russian general saying that wonder weapons were coming. That we were entering a new age of weapons, and specifically laser and radiation weapons like directed energy weapons, things like that. Lasers that do all kinds of things, including being able to simulate UFOs, UAPs, the supposed circumstances around them. So we will be getting into that and some of the US tech that has been made that does same. And in the second segment, we will be joined by the amazing Dr. Rita Louise. We will be talking about, changing mindful awareness and what mindful awareness is, how mindful awareness can help us break out of the rote programs that we are in, and why we're in those rote programs to begin with, not only societally, but psychologically, and why we hold on to them. Oh, so tight, and it's so hard to get rid of them. So that's our guest in the second segment. I would like to apologize to our guest from last week for accidentally showing a still frame of his video on screen. Sorry about that, Max Hawthorne. Things have been corrected online, all that kind of good stuff. So that has been removed. But stop on by his site, check that out. Of course, our guest for the first segment tonight, once again, is our good friend Mike Turber. He is the head of 5x5 News. Shin and Ray Caffey, I kind of hold you responsible for my friendship with this guy. He's one of my best friends in the world. We text about all kinds of things. Welcome back to the show, Mike Turber. How you doing, bud?
I am doing splendiferous, and thank you, sir. Appreciate all the kind words and everything. And I've got to admit, you have done masterfully well with your astrophotography. I am, you know, each time I see you put up an image, and when I teased you about the Orion image, you know, there's that feeling you get when you see the image for the first time. Because when you see it with the naked eye, it doesn't really look like that much. But once you take that first image and it takes a few seconds to get it, and then you look at it, you're like, oh my
god. Yeah, you see it.
It's gorgeous, because I mean, you're taking images that are printable. I mean, that you have news stations that were using your images, so you're doing quite well.
It's been fantastic. Like I tell people, it's an obsession. Typically this time of night, my wife is putting the boy to bed. He and the cat will be in the bedroom listening to a story, and I take the scope out. And for the longest time, I gave myself a 5-minute challenge. What can I capture in 5 minutes? And out of that 5-minute session, I am allowed to keep 5 images to edit.
Have you done Andromeda yet?
What's that?
Have you done Andromeda yet?
I have not gotten to Andromeda yet. I have tried. I've got a new smart scope that I'm thoroughly enjoying and loving. It's fantastic. And that is what I'm doing a lot of my stuff with. Because it's got a lot of auto tracking built into it. And when it comes to doing things with the kids, it's not like a 45-minute setup process.
You do Andromeda, it's as easy as taking the image of Orion, except the difference is that Orion is in our galaxy, where Andromeda is a whole nother galaxy. It's also the furthest object that the human eye can see, the naked human eye can see. It's 2.2 million light years away. So right now,
I'm looking for M85. That's going to be fun. That's a huge binary star system that goes supernova almost on the same regularity as this eclipse. So you won't see it again for another 85 years, but that'll be pretty cool to see something, a magnitude 2 brightness, which just for those of you out there who aren't aware, a magnitude 2 is about the same as Polaris, about the same as the North Star.
Yep.
So
it will be bright.
It'll same thing with Beetlejuice. Cool. I want to thank you for adding to that journey in my life, man. It's been super fun to rabbit hole with that and really get into things.
It's been a passion of mine. I mean, since I was a kid, once I heard some of the first few facts about space, I was hooked. I mean, space is just so bizarre. And you really have to stretch the imagination to be able to, you know, wrap your head around the information you're getting. Like a teaspoon full of a neutron star would weigh more than all of the people on the planet Earth. I mean, that's just incredible. I mean, it's hard to think that, but that's true. So it's pretty neat. Pretty neat stuff.
It really is thinking on not only a cosmic scale, but on a scale that is almost unimaginable once you start getting into it. And even yesterday, keeping my boy home from school and going over things, teaching him about eclipses and watching shows about the sun, things like that. You know, my wife was like, oh my God, you could fit a million Earths inside the sun. I was like, yep, absolutely. Like that is a large, large astral body. So, Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
864,000 miles in diameter, so it's big. And if you took all of the planets and put them together, they would not equal 1% of the sun. Not if all of them together, including Jupiter, would not equal 1% of the sun.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Well, and that's just it. And even you know, to meander this into our conversation for the evening, the technology that we are about to talk about, Mike, is huge and massive, and something that, you know, the average person doesn't even consider is a possibility. And what I'm talking about, folks, is things like laser projection, plasma projection, projecting images, no different than myself, with lasers, things like that. I work in the world of audio video. We have been working on real-time holograms in my industry for years, and they exist. They're here. We can now project lasers into the sky and see things moving. It's pretty wild.
It is. And we no longer need that, backdrop or anything for, you know, for the laser to hit on it. You know, it's nice to have, you have to have some humidity in the air for it to work properly. But, for the most part, the problem was the colored lasers, the blue laser being the last laser to come into fruition here, was difficult to get the lasers to be at the same power rating. And the human eye perceives green way more than, say, you know, red. So that's why they have to up the power on one and down the power on the other to get the two to match. But when you get the RGB system going, and then you, on top of that, you get a plasma based image going. So you have the plasma in the image, which is able to generate sound. You can make these images talk.
Yep.
And you can do quite a few things. And can you imagine being on the battlefield and projecting, you know, whatever image you want over the top of your enemy? I mean, that's just, I mean, I can't wait to see the reaction videos to that.
Well, and I've got it up from DSIAC right now, the Defense Systems Information Analysis Center. Military researchers see non-lethal role for talking lasers. And and a lot of this is talking about using basically like a plasma ball that could allow troops to fire a laser that can form a plasma ball that talks to potential intruders. Mm-hmm. You know, all kinds of things. Give out voice commands to warn people, heating up a target's skin to very uncomfortable levels without burning them, and blasting confusing noises to disorient and deter. Which oddly enough kind of sounds like our topic with our good friend John Hall, Havana syndrome and targeted individuals.
Yeah, the thing is that using non-lethal diversion or, you know, direct energy weapons and whatever tactics that we can employ to avoid the actual conflict.
Yeah.
I mean, lasers are from one extreme to the other. On one extreme, they're going to be a non-lethal thing that we can introduce into the theater. And when we do that, you know, you're looking at the reaction of the people to whatever imagery you're going to project. I mean, a lot of times, the first image that I remember seeing projected was a actual Pac-Man. That was going around eating dots, and that was kind of weird, but it was just a proof of concept. And then just 3 months later, they had this image of the globe Earth. And I think I told you about this before. We walked into the room, and the room is about 60 by 60 by 24 tall. So it's a huge room. And so this projected sphere in the center of the room was just unbelievably detailed, but you could tell it was translucent. And at that time, it had to have these misters that would mist like a very fine mist of water in the air.
Yeah, haze.
Yeah. And so it actually had that was the very first interactive hologram where you could actually reach out and touch the globe and spin it. You could like drag it to certain locations and then zoom and just crazy stuff. I mean, you know, there were 16 guys in there. We're all trying to, you know, do the same thing at the same time. And it had haptic feedback. So you could actually, when you touched it, you had a sensation of actually touching something, which was quite alarming when you first do it, because the first time they had these things up, they were just like little butterflies floating around, and of course they had the Pac-Man and stuff like this. But then when they did the globe and you could actually reach out and touch it and manipulate it and stuff like that and feel it, not like feel it like a physical globe, but by touching it, you got enough of a feedback that you knew you were at the barrier, and that was the area you wanted to keep your hand in. You learn it really fast. But that was pretty interesting. So if you remember in Star Wars where they had the Death Star hologram that was laid out, it was akin to that. It was very similar to that, except it was in full color, and it was you know, it was actually utilizing Google Earth, just so you know, that was the imagery that it was using, and it you couldn't, at the time it looked better than what we saw in Star Wars. I can tell you that. So, and this was years ago. So this system is way up as far as the technology is quite a bit changed now. And now we have the ability to make it make noises and talk and do all kinds of things. Yep. And, like we were probably going to get into, where we can project images or infrared signatures of any aircraft we want, flying at any speed we want, in any number of aircraft we want, that would be a total deterrent.
Exactly. And once again, this is all on the heels of the last few years, as that good Russian general said, that you would see a new age of wonder weapons coming, not only out of Russia, but out of the rest of the world. And, you know, of course, what Mike is referring to is that that not the Lockheed Martin mini reactor, Chris, but the F-18 laser pod countermeasures. There it is. If you go to our knowledge vault, you can find the declassified document and the actual paper right here. But it is basically using a hot laser to create a ball of plasma traveling any speed they want, traveling any size they want. You know, you could make it look like three planes, you could make it look like eight planes, you could make it look like, you know, Iron Eagle coming in if you wanted to.
Exactly. And that married with DRFM technology, which is digital radio frequency modulation.
Yeah.
And what those two technologies combined. So you have Mercury Systems, I think they're out of New Jersey, that makes the DRFM modules for the aircraft that we use. And then we have Raytheon and we have Lockheed Martin that both produce the laser systems.
Yep.
And so Raytheon is based out of Tucson, and you have Lockheed Martin, which is based out of Planet 42, which is in Palmdale, which is your you know, both Plant 42 and Plant 44 are secret, but if you try to find Plant 44, you'd have a hard time finding it. But the pod system is kind of what it uses. They basically, they mount the pod just kind of like they do the Atflir pod. Uh-huh. It's very similar. And that pod system is the same or similar power to what was not just 10 to 15 years previous had required a modified KC-130. So if you can imagine shrinking that down to a Atflir size pod, and that I think it was gallium arsenide laser that was in the KC-130. I'm not 100% sure, but that laser required every inch of that aircraft to generate the energy to produce the power that that laser was doing. So now as you move forward and you get into the either pulse, non-pulse laser systems.
Yep.
And just so everybody knows the difference between a pulse laser and a non-pulse laser. A non-pulse laser fires a continuous beam.
Yeah.
I mean, and a pulse laser to the eye, to what you would see, would also fire a continuous beam, except it would be flickering faster than your eye could see. So it saves power. So you could fire a 500 watt laser and a 1 watt laser, and the 1 watt laser could look just like the 500 watt laser because of the pulse action. But the power behind it is where the difference comes in. So the new, sixth generation, aircraft that will be, already flying now, but they're going to be introduced into service, will be equipped with a laser on board the aircraft built into it. And it will also have the ability for a pod system, that will have much more capability and integrate with the systems on board. So while the pilot's flying, the laser system can be turned on and have it can run autonomous. And and the good thing about the laser system is you will have 360 degrees of shielding, basically. It'd be like the Iron Dome, but wrapped around your aircraft. Mm-hmm. And anything that comes into range, it's going to be toast.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, once again, a lot of this, there was hearsay and conjecture at the beginning of things. If some of this may have been, of course, Russia gaming us.
Yeah.
We have, of course, posited whether or not it is an unknown quantitative testing a known quantitative, you know. pretty much one department wargaming their own materiel against another department, mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to them, which is rare, you know. They definitely wouldn't be, let me put it this way. They would not be contaminating the airspace with some right. with something else that could cause a hazard. So without knowledge, so they wouldn't be running a test flight of an unknown craft inside of known airspace where a drill is going on.
Yeah, other than the aircraft that's obviously, you know, had the systems on board, yeah. whether it be the Mercury systems or Raytheon or Lockheed Martin.
Well, and that's just it, is that, you know, but yes, they would definitely test a laser pod system on a craft that would already be out in the area.
Mm-hmm. You definitely. Know? And the of course, they have the China Lake and the, you know, just north of Nellis, you have the Nevada testing grounds. We have successfully placed laser systems, obviously in aircraft, like the F-18 obviously has a nearly operational equipment, and the F-18 will have a similar system. But also the Growler, which is a variation of the F-18, is going to be equipped with that. So the Navy's going to have that F-18 that will be equipped with a offensive and a defensive version of the laser-based system. So you'll have a pod, say, on the left chin and a pod on the right chin, both doing exact opposite jobs, which is going to be very interesting. One made by Raytheon, yeah. one made by Lockheed Martin. So that's going to be pretty cool. But the other end of the spectrum that we're looking at is we've already tested these systems on a helicopter. So the first helicopters have already flown, and the lasers have worked quite well. In fact, it was a success on the first try. And the Navy-based systems have that as well.
I've actively got up on screen right now the MALD decoy, the MALD decoy, which I found while doing some research for today, which is pretty much an actual platform.
Mm-hmm.
Doing exactly what we're talking about.
Yep.
Except it's like an automated platform. Like imagine that pod, like what we're talking about, that typically flies underneath an F-18, but mm-hmm. it's automated like a drone.
Yeah, and some of the RQ series are going to be updated, you know, with that. I think it's RQ-185. We'll have those laser-based systems. And the cool thing is with the next generation of fighters, those fighters will be flying with drones. Say two drones would take off with your fighter. So you would have like two R2-D2s flying along with you. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. And they would be equipped with lasers, with all kinds of EW, you know, electronic warfare, yeah. Countermeasures and all these things to protect the manned aircraft. And keep in mind, the sixth generation aircraft does not even need to be piloted. Just so you know, that is an option to have, and it's a good option, because if you wanted to, you know, run a mission that's extremely dangerous, you could completely run it autonomous, and it would probably it might even do better because you don't have the concerns of the pilot. But
yeah,
but we still have to have pilots in there. I mean, I just can't see us transitioning on this generation over to a pilotless.
To a piloted.
Yeah.
And that's just it. Like it says how it works, like the flexible modular system flies a pre-programmed mission that protects mm-hmm. allied aircraft while confusing enemy integrated air defense systems.
Say that five times real fast.
Yeah.
The systems that we are going up against. Now, keep in mind, Russia, we are the leader of the pact here. But there are some concerns with China coming out with some lower power systems that are going to be incorporated into the J-20 fighter aircraft. And that's something that we believe is already happening.
Yeah.
But our systems have been keep in mind, we initially, back when we had SDI, which is the Star Wars Defense Initiative, that system was looking at placing lasers in space. But there was a weapons treaty. We weren't exactly sure how that was going to be handled. I think I even told you the story. There was a think tank that we had, up in, just outside of Baltimore. And, during that think tank, a lot of questions were posed to these people. And I happened to be in the same team with John McAfee was on. So me and John McAfee are on the same team. So we're, you know, cutting questions back and forth. This is the first time I'd ever met him. And one of the questions was, how could we utilize a space-based weapon system and not go against the treaty? And I came up with the idea, and I think I worked it out with this God, there was a guy in Boston. He was at MIT. I can't remember his name. Anyway, if you look up space-based laser system, the idea I'm about to tell you is it came out of this think tank. So I basically just said, instead of putting the laser in space, which would make it obsolete within a year, and there's really no way to upgrade it, and you can't really upgrade the power and various things like this, just put the mirror in space. You don't have to put the laser in space. Just put the mirror in space. So yeah. Then you're not violating any treaties, and it's just there, ready to be, bounced off of whenever is necessary. Of course, there's a lot more to it than that. As simple as that sounds, you have to have adaptive optics and stuff like this. But that idea back then was something that DARPA was looking at, and AFRL, NRL. We're looking at those types of systems, and as it would relate to Navy ships, or maybe a Navy ship could have an aerostat or something above the horizon, because you fire a laser, you can't fire a laser from ship past the horizon, unless you reflect it off of something. So that idea is basically incorporated into that as well. So it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting when you think about it, because we're making a giant leap from munitions based weapon systems to laser based weapon systems, which seems like a very large leap. But in reality, we've had lasers for a long time, very long time.
Yes.
We've watched enough sci-fi movies for a long time, and we've all wondered, when are we going to have lasers? But the Navy has had an operational laser system, I think, for around 5 or 6 years now. For a pretty good while.
Yeah. I mean, the first successful tests were done in like 2012, something like that, where it destroyed a decoy, and it's only gotten better. And I just popped up from space.com, satellite spots construction of satellite laser facility, in Russia. It's actively a facility, ground-based facility, that is reportedly being built to target orbiting satellites with lasers. So being able to project into the clouds, being able to have something that powerful that would be able to show something is not that crazy, not that wild, and not that exotic anymore.
Right. The interesting thing about lasers, too, is you can fire a pre-laser, which would basically cut you a hole.
Yep.
In cloud base. And that's something that we talked about too, is like, well, we can't fire the laser on a cloudy day. Well, yeah, you can. You just fire your pre-laser, which basically is way hotter than it needs to be. And you can focus lasers by firing several lasers at a common point, and that point becomes superheated so much so that it's actually hotter than the surface of the sun.
You mean like the Death Star?
Yeah, exactly. The three beams coming out from that circle and then connecting together, which could not really happen in real life.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't join and become a bigger laser. Yeah. You could do it with combining lenses and things like that.
Yeah, if you had a lens there, like a prism or something there, that we gathered the beams and put them together and send it on its way. But it was a cool scene to see.
Pretty epic.
If we just saw a single laser coming out.
However, the principles of it are pretty interesting. And even whenever you go back to the declassified documents, because one of the things that is obviously necessary whenever you take a look here at the actual principle of operation of this laser that's being used to make these things, you need nuclear excitation and nuclear reaction in order for this to happen on power scale. And you may say, well, where are you going to get that in an F-18? Let me refer you again to the Knowledge Vault, folks. Knowledge Vault, curiousrealm.com/knowledge/declassified, and hop right there where it says Lockheed Martin mini reactor. This is another one that was publication date 2018, right there. And there it is. An actual reactor made to fit inside of an F-16. To power exactly things like this.
Yeah. And I got to see their first fusion reactor that they were basically building. It was about the size of a bus.
Yeah.
And, the guy was – I can't remember the guy's name. It's the same guy that's in the video, as a matter of fact. When he was discussing it, he was saying that this will be shrunk down to a smaller size. And now he was talking about within a year.
That they could three generation that every year. That every year they could make that 2-3 times. And each time it would be either smaller or more efficient.
Exactly, exactly.
And so, that was a while back. And one of my favorite things is in the actual patent schematic, it shows those heat injectors that you see right there, the part 170 is actually lasers conjoining on one spot to superheat an element in order to create the reaction.
Exactly. And so you're creating a miniature fusion reactor, which these laser systems, the current systems, laser systems that will be incorporated or become operational at first will not be fusion powered. But they will be pulling energy off of the generators, off the turbines, it'll fill up capacitors and what have you, and then it will be burst. So that system is going to be, you know, much like a glorified stun gun, so to speak. That's how stun guns work, that you can take a 9-volt battery and pump it up to 1,000,000 volts. And you're wondering, well, how can a 9-volt battery make 1,000,000 volts? Well, it's through capacitors and what have you.
Yeah,
and that's
staging.
How that works. So, so that's the first systems are going to be incorporate that, just because the technology is already here. And the fusion systems are going to be incorporated, from my understanding, into the EGAD system. And also, the Air Force has already requested that the study begin, or it may have already began, for converted C-130s that will have this system on board. So you can imagine a gunnery ship that normally has a 105-millimeter howitzer hanging out the side of the aircraft as it does an orbit on you and is firing 105-millimeter shells down on the target. That's scary enough. Now imagine that same aircraft firing lasers, multiple lasers at the same time, and hitting multiple targets at the same time.
Yeah.
That's the advantage. You can hit, let's say, if it can track 16 to 32 or 100 different objects, it can fire at all of those objects at the same time. That's something that a lot of people don't fathom. It's not like you're aiming the weapon and fire. It's not like a plasma rifle or a rail gun or something like that. These things can actually, just like you do when they draw images, like if you've ever been to Stone Mountain or if you've ever watched a laser light show, when it draws these images, it's firing one laser and it's drawing all of this stuff. And that's a similar way that the multiple targeting solution, I think it actually is called MTS, would be incorporated into the system. And it would actually, instead of firing at one target and then giving warning to all the other targets, you just hit all the targets at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, through spinning prisms, laser, spinning prisms, mirror displays, things like that, you can direct that beam any number of directions, and create, once again, even as it showed in the document, create more than one UFO, more than one obstacle for the missile to follow. You could create a fleet. You could create an entire invading fleet for the enemy radar to pick up before you ever get there.
That's right. Look at the ASA. There's a whole fleet of them.
Yeah.
We've heard those words before on a certain UFO video.
Yeah. Yeah.
That very much may be what that was. But the other advantage of a laser-based system, first off, is it's not like munitions where you're going to run out. You don't run out of ammunition. So aircraft that takes off will, the pilot is not going to have to worry about, I've only got 160 rounds left. I got to be careful, do some, short bursts or whatever. No, let them have it. The system can just keep firing lasers. The other cool thing, too, is the laser is almost instantaneous on the battlefield. So when you fire, it hits the target like instantly. So you're not, there's no delay. There's no, the other aircraft cannot put up chaff, cannot put out flares. There's nothing really the other aircraft can do except for some jamming type system. That's it. So it's a whole new ball game, and it's going to be a game changer for modern warfare. Whoever is the leader of this technology is going to rule the skies and what have you. So I'm glad we're on board with it, because it looked like for a while we weren't really coming out with much. it's getting kind of scary, but it's here, and we're gonna see it. The one thing too is that some of the laser systems that are being utilized are firing infrared type lasers.
Yes,
and with the infrared laser, the difference being is that you won't see the beam. I actually have an infrared laser. I was gonna do that. I was gonna set the thing up. Whenever you fire it, you have to be extremely careful because you don't see you don't even know it's firing. It's really interesting when you're at a mall and someone's irritating you and you fire the laser while they're eating their lunch or whatever, and they start slapping their neck because they feel the burning of their neck.
Yeah.
Not that I ever did anything like that, but, these things happen. So the pilot will not see this beam going like when you see the videos depicting what this would look like, they show these laser beams firing across whatever. And that's just so it makes sense. But you're not going to see any of that. So there's going to be very difficult to find out where the lasers are coming from.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, they can figure out a way to track that. But it will be a very different war when that system is utilized. We've already used it to some degree, you know, as far as taking out drones and things like this. But once they incorporate other targeting solutions into the system, and, you know, if you can shoot 100 targets at one time instantaneously from one aircraft, and if you have 16 aircraft in the area, and you can program all 16 aircraft to fire at the exact same time, that would be a devastating, devastating thing to see.
Well, and you know, once again, why that Russian general began reusing the word Wunderwaffe, you know, the idea of wonder weapons, the idea of things beyond what we have conceived. And you know, more than just beyond what we have conceived, beyond what we thought that we would apply in the battlefield.
Yeah. There are some scary things on the drawing board. There are some scary things that are in development.
What's one of the things that worries you the most, Mike?
The utilization of a certain weapon that's called the
don't do it if you can't do it.
I
love you too much, man. Don't do it if you can't do it.
Yeah, I won't. But there is a system in play, and it's, believe it or not, it's derived off of Star Trek. Star Trek had a weapon system that was a bluff, or was thought to be a bluff, where Kirk was saying that the I can't remember what they called it, but the Enterprise would actually turn into some giant like laser ball thing and would just fire lasers in all kinds of different directions, or phasers in the case of the Star Trek. Yeah. But this system is something similar to that, in that it would be a ball structured type drone, if you want to call it that, that would be dropped into an area. And as it's dropping, kind of like if you were dropping a bomb, it would be able to independently fire at multiple targets, just like it would if it was an aircraft. But this can be dropped from, say, 50, 60,000 feet. And on its way down, I mean, it's a one-way trip. It would take out as many targets as necessary. And there's, you know, it's an end-all kind of deal for that. You know, and the advantage to this, again, is you're going to cut out collateral damage. You're not going to have situations where we had to, you know, take out somebody and he happened to be like in the case of Israel and Hamas, where they're, you know, hiding in hospitals and schools and stuff like this. They can be in a hospital. They can be in a school. It wouldn't really matter. But once the person is able to be targeted, it's an instantaneous thing. You're done if you're going to go against people. I think there's a line there as far as once it transitions into people firing at people with lasers. I think you can probably sense it if you just think about it for just a second. We've been talking about firing lasers at weapon systems, like at drones, incoming missiles, things of that nature. When you start thinking about firing a laser and hitting people, the bad thing is that it really sinks in, and it's kind of a different thought process you're having to go through when you think about it. But the advantage is that you're not going to have the collateral damage that you do with any type of munition system. So, you know, you don't have a kill radius or something like that. You would pinpoint that one target and take it out. And that, I think, is much more humane, but it's going to be a hard pill to swallow when it first happens.
Well, and you know, we have already seen, I mean, of course, we've seen drones used to great success for such things. We have seen other unmanned weapon systems used to great success for such things. That began in the Gulf War, in the first Gulf War. That was really the first tech war, you know, that I mean, we had some laser guided systems and sidewinders, things like that previous to that. You know, I want to say the sidewinder, actually another one from Raytheon, came out. I want to say the F-4 Phantom may have been one of the first planes to utilize the Sidewinder air-to-air missile.
Yeah, that's an old missile. It's been around for a while, but it's a beauty. It's a stable platform. The dynamics of it's just wonderful. The other things we have now are these cruise missiles that can be fired and actually hit a specific individual sitting in a specific seat in a car.
Yeah,
and that's I think that's the Blade one. That's with the one that has the swords that come out.
Yeah,
which sounds kind of scary, but. It performed quite well. So.
And you know, it is one of those, they're out there, you know, we have these platforms, they exist. Where is it? Yeah, there it is. The Stormbreaker.
Yeah.
And you know, these things are uber precise. They're out there. And, for me, it's the fact of, and I don't want to, I'm not an alarmist guy. You know that. I mean, heck, I utilize weak AI all the time. I'm all about AI and the utilization of AI.
Yeah.
However, I will never forget the day that me and Stephen Bishop, the former co-host of Dudes and Beer, sat in my living room and watched a man get grenaded by a drone on U.S. soil. That was the Dallas shooter, the Dallas police shooter. They had him cornered. And say what you want, folks. Whenever it is an unmanned vehicle bringing in a grenade, that's a drone strike. I'm sorry. Yep. I'm sorry. That is a coordinated drone strike. Say whatever you like. You're not going to convince me any less.
Yeah, we had robots that were, you know, battling, you know, bank robbers and stuff. There were people that were entrenched with kidnapping situations where this 5 foot tall robot with tracks would just bust down the door and go in with either. I've seen one with a flamethrower on it, and I thought that was a little bit weird, but
it's a little much. It's hostage negotiation.
You wouldn't know about farming and running, would you?
Yeah. But that's just it. Like the day of that is already here.
It is.
The day of the litmus test of what will people put up with is already well gone by. And unfortunately people put up with a lot. People put up with people being pulled out of their homes without warrants looking for people. Right. People have put up with so many things. And sadly, I think that the day that the bad AI people are worried about, because, you know, there's definitely bigger AIs out there. There's definitely military AIs. There's definitely some AIs that do some really big war games, Whopper style problem solving, you know?
There's a really interesting concept that just came out, and it's something that we brought up in a meeting last October, I think it was. I'm trying to remember what was happening at the time, but during the meeting we were discussing the utilization of AI into various agencies and what have you, and one of the things that we started to struggle with was AI in law enforcement. See, AI being utilized at, say, NSA, CSS, you know, NRO, NGA, any of these military agencies, as it relates to, you know, tasking satellites, determining what things are, blah, 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 that'll be an amazing thing. But where it becomes questionable, in other words, AI will be programmed with the rules of war.
Yeah.
Now, when you do the same program as far as the rules of war and rules of engagement and as it relates to police officers, it's quite a bit different. It's not the same.
Yep.
It's so different than it is for wartime and for, you know, all of those scenarios that we could possibly think of.
Absolutely.
The biggest question that was brought up that I kind of posed was, what if the AI determines that, because we see this a lot, where the police officer is actually at fault? What does it do?
Yeah.
What decision is it going to make? And they're like, what? I said, it has to go through a certain test to determine whether or not it should do something or suggest something. So all of the first AI is going to be, you know, suggesting what should be done or actually doing it if it's, yeah, you know, something not super, yeah, important. But when it comes down to the AI, look in a, say an AI robot is at a crime scene or something's going down or kidnapping or whatever, and then they send in the robot and the robot starts to go in there and then some cop messes up. You know, the robot will make a decision that might not be in the favor of law enforcement. You know?
That's so, right. That's right.
It was a weird scenario of events, but yeah, I've seen it. You know, you see it played out periodically where cops are covering up for each other, whatever. AI won't do that.
Yeah.
It's not going to do that. So I'm very curious as to how that's going to play out.
And that's a good thing. I'm okay with AI not carrying on the corruption. Not continuing the corruption. The issue comes in the want of short circuit, the want of circumvention, the want of, you know, cutting human out of the loop because we are the flaw.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
And of course that comes with programming. And the one thing I always bring up, we've got about 7 minutes left here, Mike, but the one thing I always bring up, of course, is Tay, you know, and it all depends. Any AI, even the big thinking military ones, all get their information from a specified data pool.
Right.
You know,
right.
And depending on what you're feeding, it is what you're going to get out. Now, you start feeding that law enforcement AI all kinds of other things, all kinds of other cases, who knows how fast it may start the racial profiling.
Well, keep in mind too that, you know, the other picture here is
because Tay became racist real quick.
Yeah,
girl had to be shut down within hours, dude. Hours.
Because AI was making up things as well. I mean,
yeah,
some answers that you get back, you know, are not exactly factual.
Well, yeah, and so AIs left by themselves over the weekend that create their own language.
That's right.
That their programmers didn't give them. They were like, you know, it's a whole lot faster. This right here.
Yeah.
You know,
and they were writing code and creating subroutines for their own things to run so they could become more efficient.
Yeah.
So they could actually, you know, multitask, because ChatGPT, for example, was being bogged down ridiculously. And the people were trying to write the algorithms and all of the different subroutines necessary to keep it efficient. But then someone said, hey, just let AI do it. It seems to be doing okay. But when it did hit, it did make itself more efficient, but at the same time, it kind of allowed for some leeway as far as being very truthful in answers. The racist thing was coming out. Remember, they shut down the Microsoft version and some other things. It's quite, you know, it's humorous to a degree, but there's some very serious implications that come out of this.
It's one of those, you know, every single time I hear that the UN has not pass legislation on robots in the battlefield.
Yeah.
That they have still not passed legislation. It's up for vote. We are passing legislation. Like, it will be too
Isaac Asimov's rules.
It will be too late. It will be too late. That's
be.
The thing is that they aren't robots yet. They're just drones. They're just drones with legs and arms. That's all they are right now, is drones. And that's all right. But it's not a far step between drone and robot.
That's true.
And once you don't have that, hey, this is definition of robot and this is what you legally have to have internationally or else it's against protocols, then Who's setting up the fact that the Asimov rules have to exist at all? Yeah. Nobody. Nobody's setting up the Asimov rules.
And then that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, so they do incorporate, the main rule, which is, never to cause harm to humans. But at the same time, a AI vehicle that's driving down the road. Now, this has been brought up many times where the AI vehicle would have to make a decision.
Yep.
Do I hit the old woman that's about to die, or do I hit the kid that's, got the future ahead of him? But it would be easier to hit the kid, but I have to make the decision to hit the older woman, and it has to choose between the two. But here's the answer that Elon Musk gave.
Yeah.
Elon Musk said that is not even an issue inside what they're programming. And he was asked why. He says the vehicle is to stop. That is how it's programmed.
Yes.
It's not programmed to make a decision to kill one person versus another. It's programmed to just stop. If someone gets killed in because of that, then that is just, it's just that's how the cards were played and the dice were rolled.
Yeah.
But the car's just programmed to stop.
It's the car is programmed to cease progress, not to choose option A or option B.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, yes, that would be premeditated and murderous. maybe premeditated in a moment, but you definitely made a real quick decision as to who you were going to cushion your blow with. You
know, some crazy Perry Mason moments in court of somebody trying to determine how much insurance should pay.
I was just about to say we have like 3 minutes left, but that was one of the things that for the last many years when I would work conferences here in town, that came to local hotels, things like that, where I sat in on tons of insurance conferences, things like that. Automated cars and drones were the two biggest hot topics. They were the two biggest hot. What do you do when a drone falls on somebody's head? What do you do when a drone falls out of the sky and lands on somebody with a package in it? Because it's being delivered. You know, what do you do when the automated car hits an automated car and they both have a passenger in it? Who's at fault?
The funny thing is the answer is the same answer as we have currently on the bus.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Like it's the same answer, but it's one of those. Neither one of those automated cars have a human being behind the wheel.
That's right.
So who are you going to sue?
That's right.
Who are you suing? That creates a problem for insurance companies. They really like suing people. It's kind of one of the ways they make their grip. So, hate Raytheon all you want. I'm trying to think of other uses for, the cryonic eye that looks at heat signatures. Maybe we'll have some nice predator detection. Come the day of the predator invading the planet.
Sick or something like that. There's so many different things as far as the thermal type imaging and
it's true. It's true.
Layered protective imaging. So, yeah.
In the last minute here, Mike, let everybody know where they can go to follow your work, where they can go to keep up with 5x5 News, all that kind of great stuff, bud.
The easiest place is going to be between YouTube and X. So between X, X is where I'll probably be more active as far as talking to people and answering questions and getting in arguments and stuff like that. And then back over to YouTube, which is where I'll present, different stories that I might be working on at the time of this last year has been kind of crazy. But this new year is starting off kind of crazy. So you'll be able to see several of the cases that I'm working on. And there should be a TV show that'd be coming out probably in October. Nice. So look forward to that.
Nice. I cannot wait. Cannot wait. We'll have to have you back on, of course, to promote that, buddy.
Sure. You better.
Thank you so much for the time, as always, my friend. Take care of yourself. I'll be sharing links, all that kind of good stuff.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Take care, man. Always a pleasure talking with Mike Turber. He is an absolutely amazing individual. Stop on by, follow his work at 5x5 News. He is always on point. Once again, the topic that we have covered tonight with laser technology, we have been chasing this hound since probably about a year or so after the videos first launched, with Go Fast Gimbal, things like that. So, it's great to see articles talking about that. all kinds of things, because this is something that we have brought up time and time and time again that so many people do not seem to look at when they are investigating this stuff. So thank you so much, as always, Mike, for coming on. Stay tuned through our commercial break, folks. When we come back, we will be joined by Dr. Rita Louise to talk about the gentle and, well, sometimes not so gentle art of mindful awareness. We will be right back after this.
The Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for hanging out through that short commercial break. Thank you so much to our sponsors. They are the folks that help make things happen here, especially True Hemp Science. They are our friends right here in Austin, Texas. Stop on by TrueHempScience.com. They are your source for amazing CBD oil. They are the only CBD I have found personally countrywide that actively has terpene profiles. Amazing stuff made through an alchemical spigyric process where every part of the plant is used. Seeds, stems, root, everything. Stop on by and check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more, as well as get two, count them, two 50 milligram edibles on your way out the door as well. TrueHempScience.com, Curious7 is the code that you want to use. Our guest in this segment is the amazing Dr. Rita, Dr. Rita Louise. We will be talking about her new book, Dang, It Was Me All Along, Cultivating Happiness Through Mindful Awareness. This is one of my favorite topics, people. As you probably know, if you are a regular listener, I am consistently preaching the doctrine of manifestation, the doctrine of, I guess nowadays, doctor, you would call it more like neuro-linguistic programming, something along those lines. You know, it's pretty interesting to see how that works out and how you can literally change the way that your brain functions, the way that things happen in your mind. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. You've been a guest before. So how have you been doing?
But when I look at the screen, there's like only half my head.
I don't know what's going on with that with our Skype guests. I'm so sorry.
I'm like, okay, I'll just talk like this.
I'm sorry. I assure that you are in the full screen presentation over here in our system.
Okay.
But yeah, you are the second guest to tell me that. And that is strange to me. So I will definitely look into that. But let's start getting into the recent book, the newest book that you have. Dang, It Was Me All Along. I love the title. Because we so often forget the fact, I mean, even when it comes to ancient cultures, ancient civilizations, how many times we have lived this story, how many times we have lived this same story as humanity and just totally forgotten it. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to life, when it comes to psychology, when it comes to how things manifest in your life, so much of it is due to rote habit. So many things
exactly
that negatively manifest in our life are due to rote habit. And we don't realize that if we can just break that chain of mental constriction of how we think about something, exactly how different life could be all around.
Well, you know, and I want to give you a slightly different twist on that term rote habit.
Mm.
I like to relate them or present them as like little computer viruses that are inside of us. And so when something happens, it's like it activates a little program in us and we just react like an automaton, you know, thus the rote habit. And we don't even think about it because we just make the assumption, well, this is me and this is how I respond.
Yeah.
But with a computer program, you can go in and rewrite the script. You can change the programming. And when that same type of situation occurs, you can have a different response to it. And that is all something that's possible.
Absolutely. And the modern mindfulness movement, I am absolutely in love with, because it really is a step back and recognize yourself situation. You know, it really is a understanding that so much of what we do and how we are impacted by the world around us is a consent into a system on our part. I have always,
you know, but that's part of the programming.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That we just sit back and behave in a certain way, you know, and we can't even blame ourselves because we're not taught any different.
That's right. That's right. No. And that's just it. And I would love to blame our parents, but they weren't taught any different. They were brought into this just as crippled as we are by it, you know, and it is really interesting that yes, you can start changing things by simple perception shifts. You know, simply
inward perception shifts.
Mm, yeah.
You know, not necessarily external, even though the external is the stimulus.
Sure.
But it is paying attention to what is that stimulus doing to me?
Yes.
And inside of me. And once you can start getting a handle on that, which is actually very simple because you just have to pay attention, thus mindfulness.
Yeah.
It's a game changer. And it is totally a game changer. No one says, oh, well, you should pay attention to it.
Yeah. And what's funny is that this is once again born of a movement that is cyclical, that has been around since the time of Marcus Aurelius, man, like Stoicism. The idea of do not let passion rule your day. Do not let passion rule your decision. If you're angry when a decision moment comes, take two steps back and three deep breaths and wait a few minutes before you make a decision, you know, because those things are embedded in there. And then when something goes wrong because of that decision you made in a moment of passion, you get more passionate and you get more angry and it feeds the feedback loop. You know, and it's literally that old age. As an 80s kid, the first thing I always think of, not only as an 80s kid, but an addict. The first thing I always think of is that old drug commercial. I work hard so I can make more money, so I can buy more cocaine, so I can work harder, so I can make more money, so I can buy more cocaine, so I can work harder. So, you know, and it's that feedback loop. And we think that we need this thing. We think that we need that negative voice. We think that we need that for some odd reason.
But again, we don't know any better. So there was this study by the National Science Research Foundation that identified that 80% of our thinking, you know, for the general public,
sure,
80% of our thinking is negative.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's that voice saying mean things inside of our head. Or it's keeping us, you know, we stay in this worry place where we're always wondering, well, what if, what if?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and let me kind of backtrack on
Please.
This book, you know, because there's a whole backstory. We can get into it, you know, but this book was because my life wasn't working. You know, so people that know me, they see me and they're like, hey, you know, she's got all this stuff going on and she got books and, you know, she's successful. Mm. But my life wasn't working and I wasn't happy. And I was tired of it. I just wanted to be content, you know, something. I wanted something better than to have this negative thinking all the time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whenever I approach a topic, there's always the question, you know, like, well, is happiness something that I can go after? Is happiness something that I can achieve? And very early on, I discovered that it was something. It could be a goal. You know, it's not that you're just happy, you know, but it's a process and it's something that you cultivate within yourself, you know, by shifting what's going on inside of you. Mm. And that kind of like got me moving forward. It's like, okay, so if I can have this, then what do I need to do to get it? And it actually turned out to be, I joke around, a really simple process, as we were talking about, of just kind of looking inside.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I'm having a negative thought. Okay. You know, and just the acknowledgement that you're having a negative thought stops the momentum and slows it down and gives you that pregnant pause to maybe have a different thought.
Absolutely.
Or maybe employ a tool like breathing or tapping or meditating or going for a walk to shift that energy so that you move out of that negative thought.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as an anxiety sufferer, that's one of the things that I've had to learn how to do in life is learn to realize when an anxiety attack is coming on. When it's happening, it's way too late.
Mm-hmm.
It's way too late. I'm in it now. I'm in it now. And learning to recognize the symptomology, learning to recognize like, oh, wait a minute, I'm starting to get really short in some of my answers here. Hold on. I really feel like I am backed into a corner for no good reason. And I don't know why. But
that's always the best time to sit there and go, okay, and I don't know why. And well, maybe, you know, one of the things that I tell people is part of it is about being curious.
Yes.
And so if you're going, well, I don't know why, then allowing your curiosity to unravel what's going on so that you can understand why and then maybe make a different choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know like my anxiety is sourced whenever something in my life that I care about so much is rocked to a point beyond my control. Doctor, where doesn't matter what my skill set is, there's nothing I can do to stop this right now. And like my old therapist used to tell me, okay, so you've recognized the point of anxiety. There's a train in front of you. All you can do is recognize the train and the train's power. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to go through the train. Don't try to beat the train. All you can do is recognize it, let it pass, and then move forward. That's it. That's all you can do. You know, and from that point forward, it was a different situation for me because, I could walk things back and I could be like, okay, so what has happened in the last little bit or what news did I get that rocked my internal system so much that I don't know how to process it, that everything else was like a 13-year-old shifting gears in a Chevy, you know, like trying to get going again.
From that point, you can process it back so that then when the trigger happens, you can be like, oh, and you don't even have to get on the train. You don't have to get near the train.
That's
You know, it's kind of like, oh, there's the train. I'm just going to watch it go down the road and I'm not going to get on.
Exactly. And that is just it. At that point, now you've seen the train and you can consent to buy a ticket or not.
Exactly.
You're no longer just getting smashed by the train every time. Now you have a point of consent into the system. Where it's I have used a turn of phrase with my son, who is about to be 7 for the longest time. And that is, you can't hit if you don't swing. and you know, baseball reference for effort in life. You're gonna miss. You'll never know if you don't swing. However, it just dawned on me the other day that that utterly has another point of view, which is the point of view of the consent into the system that I talk about in the show all the time, whether it's the consent into the paranormal, what have you. It's the fact of you are consenting into part of a system. You're consenting into the system of anger. You're allowing yourself to be angry. And by allowing yourself to be angry, you've now relinquished your power to that other person or situation.
Exactly.
And now you're angry that you've relinquished your power. So,
but only once you're aware.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've had days, you know, like I've been working on this process for about 2 years, you know, and I want to tell people that once I really started working with paying attention to what was going on.
Yeah.
I saw dramatic results in 6 months.
Absolutely.
Dramatic.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and the rest has just been fine tuning, you know, and I joke around, like you were saying, anxiety attack. I just call it bad brain, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm having a bad brain day, you know, and sometimes I sit there and I try to understand why I'm having a bad brain. You know, and sometimes I just own the fact that I'm having a bad brain day,
yeah.
You know, and just try to navigate it best I can.
Yeah. And it's okay because you're human and that's going to happen. We aren't all superhuman. And believe me, like my addiction, doctor, came from the fact this took me years to break down. But I remember in college, I had a Spanish teacher in college. Amazing teacher, Dr. Rosensteel. If you're out there listening, hello. Buenos noches. I could tutor people in Spanish and bring them from a D to a B in a heartbeat. My problem was I could not get myself to class. Didn't matter that I did my assignments. Didn't matter that I could pass a test in Spanish with my eyes closed, hands, tongue tied behind my back. I could trill an R, you know, what mattered was the fact that I was starting at a B, C plus by not showing up to class. And when my teacher took me aside and asked me, I was like, you know, some days I wake up and the thought of everything before me and the thought of everything that's just happened in the last day or so is so big. It's so big that I don't know what to do with it. And when I start trying to chase it down, it's like a whirlpool starts and I can't get away from it and I can't stop thinking and I can't stop going through the permutations of what that different decision may have rooted to.
Right.
You know, and I get to
I'm
a point.
You.
Yeah. I get to a point of literal mental standstill where it's like the brakes have ground to a halt. It's that moment in the movie The Flash where you're going so fast that everything around you freezes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what would happen. I would come out of it and look and it'd be like, holy crap, it's 3:30. Mm-hmm. Like, I totally missed school today. You know, just because
but at least it was only one day. I mean, I call that.
Yeah, but it happened over and over. When it turns into half a semester.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Days.
You know, I call it the rabbit hole. And it's
yeah.
like, you know, it would last a day, a week, a
yeah.
couple weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, it's like when I came up out of the hole, it was like, oh, there's sunshine.
Yeah.
Oh, there's people.
Yeah. Yeah. Whole new revelations.
Just a very novel experience.
Well, yeah, but it's the fact of knowing that. Recognizing that endpoint and consenting not to be part of the system.
Correct.
Consenting that I only need this much and I need to get out of that situation. I only need this much information to carry forth my task. Anything else is overwhelming to the system. You know,
and I made the decision to myself that my happiness was the most important thing to me. And so
that's
if
right.
something is happening and it's messing with my energy, if it's making me have lower energy and more negative energy, then I need to stop and look around and go, what's going on? Because obviously this is affecting me in a negative way and it's affecting my happiness. And so
absolutely,
you know, then I need to just, you know, get out of it, walk away from it, make a different decision, you know, whatever it seems that I need to do. And sometimes, you know, we need to just ask ourselves, ask our higher selves, ask God, the universe, whatever. What do I need to do now? Or what do I need to know now so that I can get out of this?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then listen, that's half of it. And then listen.
Yes. No. And that is honestly where my seminary training came in more handy than ever. With this gestalt therapy, so to speak, was the fact of being still and listening after, you know, because you have to be still and listen. If you're not going to be still and listen, then you will reconsent into the system. Like it will happen because you're not letting that moment take root. You know, and how do people, because this is a lot of information and it's beautiful information, doctor. When I went through and read the PDF that you sent, of the book, absolutely phenomenal. And so many things that spiritual direction wise, things like that spiritual directors, when I was in the seminary, formation directors tried to tell me, and I was so young and impetuous that I was not willing to listen. And had I just shut up, man.
But you know, there's listening to other people, which, you know, can be hard depending on who they are.
Yes.
But then there's listening to ourselves.
Yes.
You know, I was you mentioned counseling, so I was in counseling.
Sure.
And the therapist was like, well, you need to find fun things to do, because he thinks I'm a workaholic.
Yes.
So and so I try crocheting and I try to do gardening and I'm like, boring, 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 boring. You know, I like writing, you know, I like doing stuff that to other people seem like work, but I'm passionate about it.
Yep.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
And so why should it be considered work? So I decided I wasn't going to listen to him about it. And I was just going to listen to what floats my boat, what makes me happy.
Yeah.
And doing stuff that appears like work to other people makes me happy, because, you know, I just feel like I pretty much live my life based on, hey, Rita, you need to do this, you know, like that inside voice. And it's kind of like, after I argue.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Okay. And I just surrender to whatever that is, you know, and with some people, you know, and one of the things I kind of talk about is relationships, you know, because we can be pretty zen when we're all by ourselves. Mm. And it's when we are interacting with other people that, you know, the training wheels fall off. And, well, you know, which includes, you know, our personal relationships and our professional relationships.
Yes.
And, you know, learning to be able to navigate those is just so important. But again, it's making yourself the priority. You know, we're not taught to love ourselves. We're not taught to make ourselves a priority. When it comes to our inner world, we're not really taught anything. And with how things are these days, you know, they don't even have home ec anymore where they teach you how to, like, you know, iron or balance a checkbook or whatever, you know? And so I don't know where those skill sets are being applied. I mean, you know, people have skill sets, you know, and people can do stuff. And school did teach you how to do stuff, but I don't know what they teach anymore.
Well, and, you know, my years of psychology, abnormal psychology, teaching children, young children, and especially teenagers, have really helped me process adults. And the one thing I've learned over the many years is, age 4 to 40, the only difference is by age 40, you should know better than to pull people's hair. A 4-year-old is unless invited to do so. A 4-year-old is just as deep as a 40-year-old, and every 40-year-old is just as childish as a 4-year-old. You know, I have been asked the most confounding questions by a 4-year-old where it's like, wow, my man, like, that's existential in a different way. And that's deep.
You know, but if you think about it, a lot of our rote habits, I'm going to use your word, you know, those little viruses, those programs and scripts that we have inside of us, they all form before we're the age of 7.
That's right.
You know, so I think that's why a lot of people, myself included, just make the assumption, this is who I am, and this is how I'm going to act in this situation over and over and over again. And they don't realize that you can change.
You can. You can. And the old dogs can learn new tricks. It may take a little while longer, but they can learn. We can learn these things. Once again, the first thing it takes, much like your subtraction of consent into the system, is your consent into the system. Much like any addict, you could have 85 interventions until that person decides, okay, that's enough.
Exactly.
You may not be successful with any intervention, because they have not decided that they are ready to change, that they are ready to do something. And it's much like the false bill of goods that we are sold with, that beautiful four-letter word, the only four-letter word out there, love, in this culture. And yes, it comes down to, do we love ourselves? And we have to remember that love is not an accident. We are taught that we fall in love. Love is a verb, man. That is an action word. You have to love yourself. And to tell somebody you complete me is one of the most heavy burdens you could put on somebody, because that means that you are not a complete person. Mm-hmm. And do you really want to be in a relationship with an incomplete person? You know?
I don't know. I used to be good with it.
I used to be good with it too. And then I wondered why we had problems in our relationship. I wondered why we couldn't openly talk and communicate, you know, and be open and be like, hey, like my wife just the other day, doctor, was like, you know, I realized the other day that whenever I get frustrated with you, it's because we process information in a different way, and I've got to keep bouncing it against the wall. And after about 3 or 4 bounces in the game, you're finished, and you already know what the end result for your end is going to be. So you just want to go forth and finish what you need to do and not keep bouncing the ball. But I need to keep bouncing the ball, because that's how I think, you know, and even that open communication opens up so much for non-miscommunication later, you know,
but it also makes it so that it's kind of like you can interact better.
Yes.
Because you know that this is how they process and this is how they do things. And I shouldn't get upset about it because that's just them. And
I'm pretty sure that's who I love.
Yeah.
Is who that person is. You know, and that's just it. Like, to expect somebody to change for you. No. You want them to change for them so that they can be whole and happy. Because if you're crawling through a desert and somebody crawls up next to you and says, you got some water, you know, you may not have any to spare. And that's pretty much emotionally where I think, especially here in the West, especially here in America, doctor, where most of us are sitting emotionally. We are sitting in a literal salt flat of an emotional ocean, you know, like there's zero drinkable water there for most of us emotionally. We are taught to not have contact. We're taught to not hug each other, to... It's strange to me. It's strange to me.
One of the practices that I've incorporated in the last year or so is to just, you know, if I'm talking to somebody, you know, that is close to me, to say at the end of a conversation, I love you.
That's right.
You know, and it's just, you know, it's not like I'm romantically interested in you, but, you know, that I love you and I cherish you.
That's right. It's the fact of the world would be a different place without you. My world would be a different. I don't think that there is a time in the last 20 years of my life, Doctor, that I have either left the presence of a friend or hung up the phone with a friend without saying I love you.
Mm-hmm.
There are male friends of mine that I full on kiss on the mouth almost when I see them. That's how close we are and how intimate our actual love, our brotherly agape love is for each other. And that's just it. Like we have once again been sold this horrible bill of goods and been told that, well, A, love has been sexualized, which means you shouldn't be having it when you're younger. You know, you shouldn't be experiencing that deep love when you're younger. I tell my son 5 times a day that I love him, that I'm proud of him. You know, these things that I know psychologically, men are not told. We aren't told to share these things. We aren't told to tell other people I love you out loud in public.
Right.
We aren't taught that. And it's one of the most healthy things in the one of the most healthy, beautiful things in the world. And we're told to ignore it. Literally. As the alpha male in a society.
You know, but women are taught to people please.
That's
right.
You know,
and to take care of everybody else. And then they wonder why they are codependent or why they don't love themselves, because no one said, hey, you need to take care of you.
That's
too.
Right.
Like, you need to be part of the equation.
My God.
Not just me. You're not supposed to just give it all up.
Yep. Yeah. Even the false bill of goods of, you know, the one I bring up regularly is Prince Charming. Wait a minute. Didn't that guy come kiss her in her sleep?
Is
that, that the guy you should be looking for? You know, the guy that stalked you down because you lost a shoe, that's who you should be looking for. You know, like when you start looking at these things in a modern eye, like some of the many things that girls have been programmed to in a very soft way over the last many decades are like, wow, wow, what an expectation.
Also taught to like put up with a lot of crap.
That's
right. I know that in my marriages, I've been married multiple times. That, you know, now you're married and you're supposed to do it for better or worse, and they would be worse, and it leaves you in this place where you just tolerate a lot of crap.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, yeah, I'm not really interested in tolerating crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and once again, you know, because we have this entrenched idea. We have this almost hypnotic idea of what we're supposed to be.
But it's part of that program.
It's
part of that script.
Absolutely.
That is put in there, you know, and then when we don't get it, you know, when we don't lose weight and get really skinny, when we don't get married and have children, when we don't do these things that society says is regular and normal,
that's right,
then we just beat ourselves up about it. And or we won't move forward in X until we complete Y.
Yeah.
And put our lives on hold because we're a failure over here. And so until I achieve this, I can't achieve any of the other things that I want in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just it, Doctor. The fact that, you know, we do not understand that we once again have the choice. We have the choice from the get-go. And that's something that I try to tell my son all the time is that you have the choice, son. You know,
but there are so many people that can't make the hard choice. And
yes.
So I'm going to give an example. So I have a
Please.
Girlfriend who has this job. The boss is toxic. It's been toxic. She hates the job, but she makes a lot of money. You know, and
it's
so
a hard
but
one
she'll
to leave.
Complain about it and complain about it. And she's like, but I don't know what to do. And it's like, well, maybe you should go look for a different job. you know, and she's like, no, I can't do that, you know? And so she cuts that choice off. And even though there have been other opportunities that have presented themselves to her for other employment that was going to pay her good, she has turned it down because she has this feeling of security and won't make the choice and won't step out on the limb.
Yeah.
To do something different.
Well, and that's what I was just about to say. Can't or won't.
Right.
Can't or won't. And a lot of this truly comes down to that real understanding and that real stoic understanding of the difference between want and need in your life. There are very few things that you need. You need the things on like the empirical chart of needs. Like, you need security, you need shelter, you need food, you need water, you need love and attention from another human being. Like, these are
a
needs.
Good internet connection.
Well, yeah, 10 up, 10 down at a minimum. Enough to stream. But these are the emotional needs that we have. And, you know, as we say on the show all the time, our brains for millennia have been wired for negative reinforcement. They have been wired to learn because in the wild, it's better for you to know fire is hot. It will kill you. Then fire will cook your food and make it savory. You know,
exactly.
So we learn more from negative reinforcement faster than we learn from positive reinforcement. So, yeah,
But I'm going to put a but there.
Please, because it's the same.
But if your priority is your happiness,
that's right.
If that's the priority, you might be making a choice and it might be a white knuckle experience and it might take every bit of gumption that
that's
you
right.
have to move forward with that decision. But people that do that, 99% of the time in hindsight, come to the conclusion that that choice was the best decision they ever made in their lives.
Yep.
Period.
Yep. Hands down. Hands down. My self-employment was imposed upon me. I had a side hustle. I ran audio. I did sound for clubs and venues and bands and live recordings and things like that. I went to a friend's wedding, came back, had no job. Ended up just having to hustle my way through a month of rent and bills and made enough in a few weeks that I had more than rent and bills. And it was like, oh, well, then I got a little like part-time thing where I was literally the crossing guard about three blocks away from my house. And between that and just hustling and doing what I do, I was able to pay for everything.
Exactly.
And once I learned
that, it was something that you love to do.
That's just it. Like whenever I'm in a social media group and it's like, poorly describe what you do for a living. My answer is always I get paid to travel and play with people's expensive toys. I do audio video for a living. All this stuff over my shoulder is what I do. I go out and I hook up wires and hook up gear and make shows happen. It's what I do in my spare time anyway, because I love it. I don't work a day.
I just joke around and say, I just do whatever they tell me to do.
That's it.
You know? And
and somehow it all works out. And that's just it. You know, once you take pen to paper and you see what your bare minimum expenses are and you say, you know what, I can be happy and fulfilled if those are met. I can be happy and fulfilled if those are met at a bare minimum. You know, you'd be surprised how much happier you get because the rest of it is great, but it's also a point of stress. It's also a point of, for some reason, you feel like you need to complete a race that you never had to compete in. You never had to compete with the Joneses, ever. Ever. You were sold that bill of goods.
Okay, I'm not really sure where to go with that, so I'm going to shift the topic here.
Well, no, it's just the fact of, you know, you don't have to compete with everybody else for your happiness.
Oh, exactly.
What makes somebody happy may not make you happy, and that's okay.
You know, but I want to come back, you know, because you were talking about the change part, and I think it's really important.
Yeah.
You know, so there's the choice. The choice part can be really daunting for some people, you know, especially if you're in a marriage and there's kids, but it's dysfunctional, and the choice is I can stay or I can go. And you know, the healthier thing, the thing for your happiness is I need to go. You know, that can be a really daunting decision to have to make.
Yeah.
But this other stuff we've been talking about, this whole mindfulness thing and looking inside, that part is so freaking easy. And the description that I like to use is that being mindful is like dieting. You know, so dieting is easy. You just don't eat a lot of food. That's dieting. Period. And if you have a bad day and you eat the entire bag of Oreo cookies, you don't beat yourself up. You just go, wow, I just ate that entire bag of Oreo cookies. Well, you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to be better. And you just kind of get back up on your wagon you start being mindful again. And so, you know, the bag of cookies is like you're having a bad brain day and it's okay, you know. But as you work through this process, and I said earlier, you know, in 6 months, I noticed a distinct change, you know, and now that it's been over a year, I mean, I used to have bad brain a lot. And now it's kind of like maybe once every couple of months, and it might last for a couple of hours. And even that, you know, so I've been kind of going through this process with, you know, like I wrote the book, I'm working on my journey. And so I have this girlfriend, and I've been using her as an example, who would have panic attacks, like to the point that she would be throwing up panic attacks.
Yep. Yep. I'm there.
And I mentioned to her the other day, you know, like if something happened to her house, and we think there was like some weird past life thing, or I don't even know, but if something would happen to her house, she would just go into a full blown meltdown, be throwing up, can't get out of bed, blah, 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 blah. And she had something happen at her house, like a water leak or something, and no panic attack and no throwing up. And it was a nothing burger for her. I mean, she called her son, she got it fixed. And I reflected that back to her. I said, you know, if this had been 6 months ago, you would have been all over the place and you would have been beside yourself. So I want you to validate that's where you were, but this is where you are now.
That's right.
And I think part of it is just taking stock of, wow, somebody did this and normally it would make me have a heart attack. And now the same, you know, like my webpage stuff, you know, you sit there and you tell me like, oh, this is broken on your webpage. You know, it would make me, the world is coming to an end and everything needs to stop. And I need to address this now.
Yeah.
Now I'm kind of like, oh yeah, you know, and I get it up and running and, you know, I'll fix it later, you know, but it's not all this anxiety tied to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I will admit a lot of mine is panic like that. It's just the fact of when somebody mentions something, I feel like it suddenly has to be top of the plate. Mm-hmm. When it could wait a day or two, you know, if I really stop and think about it. And, you know, what's interesting in the last few minutes, we have you for about 15 more minutes, doctor. I want to explore the concept of how this gets broadcast, because, you know, we once again, a lot of our stuff is rote habit. A lot of our stuff is even down to the point of mitochondrial. You know, it is epigenetic. Our tortures, our wounds can come from epigenetic damage, from things that happened to our parents. There was a huge study that was just done a year or so ago with Vietnam vets showing the fact that their children had the markers for PTSD.
Really?
Yes. Huh. Yes, that they had epigenetic markers for PTSD, same as their parents who had been in Vietnam. And that it's a fantastic showing of the fact that trauma can be passed on. Mm-hmm. These things can be passed on. And it's not just a psychological passing on. you know, but once again, we can change our epigenetics. We can change that through diet, through behavior, all kinds of things. So there is hope, even though it goes beyond our mind.
So one of the things that I found fascinating, so just finding out that I could change me inside and be happy, you know, like more than on Thursday between 3 and 4 o'clock, was this fact. And I think you'll appreciate it. And so a little biochemistry.
Sure.
And so inside of us, you know, there are cells, and on the cells, there are something that's called receptor sites. And so the receptor site And so when something happens, our body releases hormones. They're either pleasure hormones like dopamine, or they're stress hormones like cortisol. And those hormones are released and they go to the cell and they act as like a key. And they go into the receptor site, which is like a lock, and it either activates or disactivates the cellular function. So it turns it on or turns it off, depending on what it's supposed to do. So with just that little piece of information, so if you are constantly living with anxiety or constantly being panicked or constantly having a bad inner critic or have worrying all the time and living on stress hormones, when your cells reproduce, the cells actually reproduce with more receptor sites to accommodate the stress hormones better.
That's
right. And so then something happens and your body very quickly responds because you just got a rush of stress hormones.
Yeah.
But as you sit there and start becoming more mindful, then as you start having more gratitude and as you start loving the world and loving people and you create more cells, the ones that take in the stress hormones start to diminish, and the ones that take in the good feeling hormones get more.
Yeah.
You know, and our cells replace themselves every 120 days. And so every 3 months,
you
can have this giant shift in who you are.
That's right. Absolutely. And that's just it. And once again, as your book gets into, we broadcast that out into the world around us. You know, and that is something that I've brought up for years, is the fact of we are responsible for every vibration that we drag into a room.
Mm-hmm.
We may not intend that vibration, but we need to be ready to be accountable for it, you know?
Well, and people don't understand that. I mean, you know, I work as a intuitive, a psychic person. And so when you're doing a reading for someone, that's what you're interpreting, is that vibration
that
they're emitting, period. And and so, but we don't realize that we're projecting. But I think we've all had the experience where, you know, we go somewhere and you see like this guy over there and they just got like funky energy, and you can feel their funky energy. So we know it because we've experienced it, but we don't own it. And so I just like to pose this question to the listeners. What are you projecting? Are you projecting a Hallmark movie? Or is it more like a horror movie, you know, that everybody else is picking up, you know? That's right. And it's not that it's that, you know, like, you know, there's our base being, this is who we are when we're in the present moment and we're not triggered. And then there's who we are when we are. So like my late husband came from a lot of trauma. Great guy, super great guy, until he was triggered, which thank God wasn't all that often, but you could literally feel the bad mojo coming off of his body. And it was like, wow, I'm glad that you're only like that way, like one day a year. Because if it was a regular thing, this would not be happening.
Mine is the same way. And whenever mine releases, like it's rough.
Ugly.
Doctor, it ain't pretty. And, you know, I'm normally complimented on my vibe, normally complimented on you're so easy to talk to, everything else. But, man, when it is set off in the wrong direction, it is something that I have to be fully aware of. you know, and because like I've honestly a few times been afraid of blind rage in my life, because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, once again, if you don't recognize it in yourself, then you're not going to be able to do anything about it. You know,
but even with people that, you know, and I'm going to say have a rage disorder, but, you know, sure. like don't emotionally regulate well, you know, where they can
That's
go
a
from
very
zero
kind
to
way
psycho
to put that about
in,
me.
In
Thank
a
you.
Second, you know, it really helps them.
Yes.
A lot, you know, because it makes it so that, you know, where the peer ends is, you know, well, shorter, longer.
Yes.
I don't know. You know,
yeah.
so that you're not falling off the pier quite so fast into that crazy place.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, what's interesting is along with all of this, is the fact that, to bring it back to relationships, is the idea that we don't mean to blow up on the ones that we love. It's just the fact of they're the only ones that we feel emotionally secure enough around to let them see that. You know,
interesting point. That's very true.
To open up in that way, so to speak, and to show that vulnerability, and also the fact of, you know, we just get so used to them being there and not being a judgmental mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be burdensome in and of itself, even on the loved one. You know, because, yeah, you may be blowing up because they're the pressure valve you can release around, but should you be doing that?
You know, but sometimes it's, you know, we've talked about this throughout. It's like, okay, I'm blowing up, but what was the trigger? And was that a valid reason to get upset? You know, a lot of the times it's like, it's the assumptions that we make and the programming
right.
that we have that make us feel bad or make us yeah. whatever inside.
That's right.
And it has absolutely nothing
yeah.
to do with the other person.
Yeah. Steamy is the word that we use in our house.
Steamy?
Feeling steamy. You know, it's somewhere between anger and shame.
Uh-huh.
You know, and like self-disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
That you're even feeling the anger and shame. Steamy.
Steamy.
That's,
okay.
That's how we put it. You know, it's like, I'm sorry I was steamy earlier. You know, I was busy processing the situation, but that's just it. And you have to love yourself enough to understand that you are human. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have emotional outbursts. It's going to happen, you know.
But there's also the part of being big enough to say, you know, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to crank at you. See, I'm
That's
more
right.
cranky.
That's
you know,
right.
I didn't mean to crank at you earlier. You know, this was going on and I'm sorry. And being
yeah.
the bigger person and owning your own emotions that
yeah.
you're putting on other people.
Well, and letting somebody know that I'm sorry I was triggered. You aren't responsible for my trigger. I'm responsible for the reaction to my trigger. And I'm sorry mm-hmm. for the bad reaction.
Exactly. I like the way you put that. I like the way you put that.
You know, because the world is not responsible for our triggers. If you're that triggered, maybe don't go out into the world.
Or if you're triggered by that much stuff.
Yeah. You know, and work on that until you can do it. But you have to remember that the world is not responsible for your triggers. We have to be that mental martial artist that is ready to kind of deal with it. And to move past it and to understand that we can move past it emotionally.
Well, and I think that's one of the, you know, not the core message of the book, but a big message of the book is that we can move through it, you
yeah.
know, and it is possible and we're not stuck.
Yes. Yes.
But the biggest thing is taking responsibility because it was me all along.
That's right. That's right. And it's the fact of, you know, because you allowed yourself to get into that mentality. And once you allow yourself to slip into the other mentality and to keep slipping into it, you'd be surprised how comfortable the shoes are, folks. and how easy it is to run in.
This just came to me, you know, so many of us, and I'm going to use this word, live based on ego and what society says is the right thing to do or not the right thing to do. And we don't really rely on me. What do I want? What feels good to me? And it all kind of starts with taking ownership of yourself and taking, again, ownership of your happiness and letting that guide your life and move you forward versus I need to have a big house. You know, I need to have this new car. You know, those are ancillary things. So there are so many people that have all this money and have all of this stuff, but they're miserable.
That's right.
And what's the point?
Yep. Yep. One of the first hip hop songs I ever remember, I fell in love with and I'm still in love with. It's Love's Gonna Get You by Boogie Down Productions. And it starts off with, so you're in love with that girl over there. So you're in love with that chain. You're in love with that car, you know, and that's kind of the lesson is the fact of love's going to get you. At some point, it'll come back and bite you in the butt. You're going to do something horrible to get that chain. You're going to do something horrible to attain that woman or put that woman through something emotionally that she doesn't need to be put through because you're trying to be happy through her instead of for her, you know, and it's an interesting turnaround. The fact of happiness is different than fulfillment.
Yes.
Happiness is different than fulfillment. You have to be fulfilled in order to be happy.
Well, you know, and when you put yourself into the equation, it takes you out of victim mode and it gives you your power back. That's you know, right. Now people can't do this to you.
Yes.
You know, it's that's like, right. I mean, they might try to do it to you, but you can choose to not let them or walk away or whatever that thing is versus just laying there and taking it and being the
Yeah. Being the victim.
Being the victim.
Being the victim. Not even playing the victim, being the victim. And that's just it. It really is the fact of taking your power back and understanding that
you have some.
Yeah, that you have all of it, that it's all yours, every bit of it. Whatever isn't yours, you have consented to give to somebody else.
Or not take on at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Doctor, this has been an amazing conversation. We need to have this more regularly. Because it's one of those, this is one of the topics. I know we talk a lot about paranormal on this show. We talk a lot about, cryptids, things like that. But until you understand this, it's really hard to understand your experience as that cog in the universal machine. It's really hard. It's really hard to understand that you have such a beautifully greater purpose than that 9-to-5 existence, you know, and the 9-to-5 existence may be what you have in order to subsist, but that is not your existence.
And so
that's
many
not
people
who you are
get stuck there. And it's fascinating because I have so many clients. It's like they're in their 50s and now they're discontent with their job.
Yeah.
And they don't like it anymore. And I said, well, I get that. And they're like, but I can't quit. And not like the employer, but the work that they've done for the last 25 years.
Yeah.
And I just tell them, I'm like, but shift the focus.
That's right.
You know, that's what you do to make money and pay the bills. And you let go of your attachment to it.
Yeah.
And you just do it because they give you a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then shift the focus on to what do I want and where do I want to go? And so if you're 55 and you start on that process, by the time you're ready to retire, you probably have all kinds of hobbies and all kinds of things that give you happiness so that when you do retire, you have something to do because there's so many people, they retire and they're like, well, I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And once that happens, the mental acuity goes rapidly, you know, and you can, It's a forever situation, folks. It's a beautiful, eternal world out there. Your energy will never, ever be destroyed. It only changes form. Doctor, thank you so much for the time. Thank you so much for the amazing conversation today and the beautiful message of, dang, it was me all along. Because, oh, my God, it's so true. It's us 90% of the time, Doctor.
Yes, sir, it is.
Let everybody know where they can go to pick up your books, where they can go for sessions with you, where they can go to find out the latest and greatest from Dr. Rita Louise.
Sure. So you can get my book, Dang, It Was Me All Along, at all the regular booksellers. Actually, all of my books are available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, et cetera. If you'd like an autographed copy, you can go to my website, soulhealer.com, and any book that I send out always comes autographed. If somebody is interested in getting a private consultation with me to, you know, it's a practice, and having a mindfulness buddy can be very helpful. Yeah. You know, go to my website, use the contact form. That's the best way of reaching out to me. And, you know, but one of the things that I want to share with your listeners, so every Thursday night on, and I'm going to use the YouTube. So every Thursday night at 7 o'clock p.m. Central Time, I do a live stream where I offer on-air psychic readings. And so you are welcome to come and join us. If you go to my YouTube page, which is Just Energy Radio on YouTube, you can join the chat. You can ask questions. You can hang out. I think tonight's topic is going to be intention, because there's always I always start with a topic and then it just kind of takes on a life of its own. So
yes, that's exactly how it should be. That's what a conversation's supposed to be, whether you're having it with yourself, the universe, or with a guest, Doctor.
Yes.
So thank you so much for your time again. This has been a beautiful conversation.
Thanks so much for having me, and I'm so glad that we reconnected.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. It's been a long time, and, you know, once again, we need to definitely have you on much more regularly. Please do hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience. While you are online checking out everything from the amazing Dr. Rita Louise, folks, do not forget to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can like, follow, subscribe, share. That's where you can find the store at CuriousRealm.com/store, where we have all of the video series, all of the classes, courses, books, things like that from all of our guests embedded right there. We also have CuriousRealm.com/video, where you can follow not only our YouTube, but all of the guests' YouTube as well, like Dr. Rita Louise. So stop on by and check that out at CuriousRealm.com/video. And oh, the best part is, if you're a Roku user, we have an all-new Curious Realm Roku app. It has not only all of the episodes, all of the live stuff, everything else, but it also has all of the binaural beat and meditation music that I make for music therapy, things like that. So stop on by, check that out. If you're a Roku user, just simply go to the app market and search for Curious Realm. Thank you so much, as always, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you so much for your time, your patience, your open hearts and minds. Without those, there is no conversation. Without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, as well as KPNL Radio, APR TV, and the Curious Realm app for Roku devices.
Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media and Aftermath Media family of podcasts. For more great shows and members-only content, visit groundzeromedia.org and aftermathmedia.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always